Hey sisters, welcome to the She is Kindred podcast. This is an extension of the She is Kindred storytelling collective, where our heart is to help women navigate life together through shared narratives. With heaps of honesty, a smidge of sarcasm, and endless amounts of grace upon grace, we walk through it all, good and hard, together. I'm your host, Brittany Smith, and I am so glad you're here. We are continuing our theme, Families Are Built, Not Born, with an honest conversation about surrogacy. The first in vitro gestational surrogacies were performed in the 1980s, and their success swung the doors wide open for more families to be built in this way. While it has grown in popularity over the last four decades, it's still a somewhat mysterious practice to many. I mean, we get the premise, but what about the practicality of it? And more importantly, what about the personal implications that accompany it? There's so much to learn, and I know y'all are curious. So today, we're chatting with Amy Foley, a mama to two of her own and a surrogate mama to two with one more on the way. She is here to unpack the questions and speak to both the challenges and beauty of building a family through surrogacy. Amy, I have been privileged to watch your surrogacy journey unfold, and it has been such a great joy to be able to document much of it as well. I know our conversation is going to be encouraging and enlightening to so many, but before we begin, can you just take a moment and introduce yourself to everyone?
Yeah, so I'm Amy Foley. I live in Southwest Missouri. I'm married and we have two boys, 12 and 7.5. I've been a surrogate twice so far and I'm currently on my third journey. I have my degree in early childhood education. I worked with kids for about 12 years, and about 2.5 years ago, I decided to switch back to medical, and I've been a medical assistant in an OBGYN office for the last 2.5 years.
So you are surrounded by babies.
Yes, all the time.
By pregnancy, at least. Just all pregnancy, yeah. So you are in the very early stages of starting your third surrogacy journey. Can you just share a bit about what that has looked like for you over the last 3-4 years?
Yeah, so I started in 2018 when I signed up through an agency to become a surrogate and was quickly matched with a family, and we proceeded from there. I've had two girls for them, and then I'm currently on with a new family.
Yeah. What made you be interested in becoming a surrogate in the first place?
All through middle school and high school, I was very interested in early childhood education classes. And so when I took all those home ec classes in high school, we very briefly touched on surrogacy. And when I first heard about that, I was 14 and I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, if I can have kids of my own and not have any issues with my pregnancies, this is definitely something I want to do.
So Amy is actually my best friend's younger sister. And so I've actually been privy to watch your journey from a little girl on up. And a big part of your personal story is becoming a mom at a young age. And from my perspective, pregnancy and delivery seem to come really naturally and honestly, like somewhat easy for you. Did you feel the same way? And do you think that played a role in your decision to become a surrogate?
Yeah, for sure. So I was 18 when I had my first, and it was what I thought to be like textbook pregnancy. Yeah. It was very easy. You know, I had the nausea, I had the tiredness, you know, I was sore at the end, all the things, but I felt like they were on a very small scale compared to some other people that I know.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely felt like it was very easy. Delivery was very easy, even though he was over average size.
Yeah, he was massive.
Yeah, he was 9.5 pounds. But again, very easy delivery.
That probably helped solidify your decision to become a surrogate, because it wasn't like you were expecting a terrible pregnancy or rough deliveries. Because I think for some people that would hold them back, or maybe they're high risk. Like for me, I have friends who would love to have babies of their own and they struggle with infertility, or we have family members who struggle with infertility. And I would love to be a surrogate for someone, but I'm considered high risk. And also I'm kind of crazy when I'm pregnant and I don't think my family would like that. So,
tries to say that he gets to put up with all the crazy hormones, but I'm really not that hormonal when I'm pregnant. I feel like I'm pretty good. I realize now that most of it is due to the high doses of hormones that I have to take for the pregnancy. because it's not a naturally occurring pregnancy. So you kind of have to trick your body into thinking that it's already pregnant. And so the high hormones does kind of make a difference, but we stop and laugh about it when we realize that I'm being ridiculous over silly things like commercials on TV that'll just make me cry.
Oh, really?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Do you ever have like when I was pregnant, it would be like, I have to have Taco Bell right now or I'm going to just melt into a puddle of tears and not be able to handle my life. Like, are there ever moments like that for you when you...
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's usually ice cream, which is easy to get taken care of because there's a Brahms around the corner and we love Brahms ice cream.
Yes.
But, you know, it's funny with the girls, I actually craved fruits. I wanted fruit all the time, like pineapple and strawberries. I don't know why.
When you started looking into agencies and started having conversations about making this a reality, what were some of those big questions that you had to tackle to determine if surrogacy was really the best decision for you and for your family?
Yeah, so I did a lot of research before I ever applied to any agencies. There's several Facebook pages that have like agency reviews. Mm-hmm. So I looked into those and then I just would call and you could do like an interview with somebody who works for the agency and ask them all kinds of questions. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that the insurance that we already carry for our family was going to cover surrogacy, mm-hmm. just because that's then one less out of pocket that the parents would have to pay for to get insurance that is covered for you. So we're lucky my insurance already covers everything. So that was super helpful. Just making sure that like everything was covered and that, you know, my husband's biggest thing was like, you know, what if something happens to you or what if something happens to the parents? Like, mm-hmm. what happens to this kid? Like,
right.
Where does the kid go? So the parents have to have a will written up prior to even signing contracts. That way, if something were to happen to the parents, then the baby would be taken care of by somebody that they know. So, yeah, everything is all planned out prior to ever signing any contract or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would think it's a natural fear or just question to have, like,
yeah,
okay, so say the parents did get in a car accident or something terrible happened to them, and yeah. now am I obligated to keep this baby? And that... Right. would obviously change your whole world too.
Right. Yeah. Because that's not what you're signing up for, essentially. I mean, you're signing up to help these people grow their family, not us grow ours.
Yeah.
So because we're happy with what we have.
Right. Yeah. And from a practical perspective, what are some of those other parts of the process? Like, what did that look like as a whole?
Essentially, it started out with, I sent an email to the agency that I chose, which was Circle Surrogacy, which is based out of Boston, Massachusetts. Mm. And I quickly got an email stating that I was accepted. You know, there was a whole long of list of things that I had to fill out, of things that I'm interested in, my likes and dislikes, and things that I would want out of my journey as a surrogate, and then also like postpartum, what that looks like if there is any communication to be had or wanted with a family that you would potentially be matched with. So that's the first step. The second step is they call you, like a program manager will call you and kind of discuss things and talk over how everything goes in a timeline. And then you have your psychological evaluation, which I had two, and my husband even had to do one, because they want to make sure that the home is a safe place for a pregnancy to be occurring.
Yeah.
And, you know, making sure that, you know, there's no drug use or anything like that in the household. So anybody that's over the age of 18 in the household would have to have this psych evaluation done and lab work done. After the psych eval is when you go into matching, and they send you kind of just an IP's profile. IP stands for intended parents. Mm-hmm. You get to look over their profile and see if it's somebody you're interested in. You know, there was no photos or anything, but it kind of gives a list of like what they do and how old they are, where they live, if they have any other children or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So their interests and what they want or don't want during and after the pregnancy. If it looks like that's someone you're interested in, they set up like a Skype call and you just Skype them and have a conversation, ask each other whatever questions you want. It's always very awkward in the beginning because you have no idea who these people are and you're about to possibly be pregnant and have a child for them.
So
it's kind of awkward in the beginning because you definitely want to get out awkward questions and have those conversations, because things pick up pretty quickly after you are matched. If for some reason there was something genetically wrong with the baby and they wanted to terminate the pregnancy, like, is that something that you're okay with as a surrogate? Mm-hmm. If it is, then it would be an okay match. And if it's not, then they wouldn't match you with somebody who would possibly want to terminate a pregnancy. Also, the other big like matching thing is then postpartum. If you want to continue to have communication with each other after the pregnancy or not, that's a huge matching factor. Yeah. So then after matching is when you get into contracts and everything like that. Everybody has their own set of attorneys and lawyers. And so you sign contracts and then things get going really quickly after that.
Yeah. And then it starts all the medical side. And so we can get into that in a second. Yes. But I want to backtrack just a little bit, just talking about some of those big matching issues. And honestly, yeah, a lot of that comes down to like moral and ethical questions. And I think that's something that people don't think about from an ethical standpoint. It's not just what you believe is right, but also what they believe is right, and finding that middle ground. And I think for you, that was a pretty straightforward process with your first couple, right?
Yeah, that was a very easy question and answer for me, because personally, it's not my child. I'm not related to them whatsoever. They all have had egg donors. So it's not my choice, I feel like. It's not my kids. So I don't get to have a say. I am totally fine with them choosing to do whatever they need or want.
Do you feel like it was hard to kind of compartmentalize that? Not that specific piece, but just knowing that I'm literally just a vessel for this child, you know, which is a strange thing when you think about it.
It is. I have not had any issues whatsoever, because I just know that, like, it's not my kid. It never was my kid. And I get asked that question all the time. Right. But yeah, no, that's never been a question for me. And I have people that, you know, say, hey, I'm interested in becoming a surrogate, but you know, I don't know how I would feel about giving up the baby afterwards. I'm like, okay, that right there tells me no.
Don't
you should
it.
Not.
Yeah.
Don't do it. If you have to question that, it's not a good idea, because you are the most vulnerable and emotional and hormonal after having a baby. And so that is not something that you want to be thinking about in that time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the other piece that you mentioned was just the choice of contact after the baby's born. And you did choose to stay in contact with your first family. What has that been like?
That was very important to me, to be able to stay in contact with any kids that I ever have for other people, because if they were going to have open communication with their children and tell them like how they got them and where they came from, if the kids ever had questions or anything for me, like I want like to be there for them and help them and answer things for them. So, and just watching kids grow up is a great thing. The first family that I was matched with actually lives in France, and I have gone there twice to visit them. And we still talk all the time. We text and send pictures, and I get updates from them all the time on a weekly basis.
And what did they tell the girls about who you are?
The older one just turned 3 this summer, and so she knows exactly who I am. Ever since she was a baby, she loved to sit and FaceTime with me, and she would just watch the phone very intently and, you know, talk back to me. And so, you know, she just calls me Amy. My kids kind of refer to them as cousins. Mm. You know, they ask like, well, what are they to us? I'm like, well, you can call them cousins. Right. So that's they refer to them. And I refer to the girls as my nieces. So yeah, we still have a lot of communication back and forth. And the older one loves to run around the house on Sundays when we have our Skype call at noon or 1 o'clock. She runs around the house with the phone, and I don't understand hardly anything that she's saying anymore, because I do not speak very good French. Yeah. But I understand a few things that she says.
Do you talk to them weekly then?
Yeah, we still talk pretty much weekly. So when we matched, the agency that we go through really recommends having like face-to-face contact, so like FaceTime, talking at least once a week. And so we always scheduled Sundays at noon to have our Skype calls. And so we still pretty much talk every Sunday at noon.
That's amazing. And in a lot of ways, you feel like you've gained another family.
Oh, for sure. So their family and I and my whole family are very, very close. Yeah. You know, I know all of their parents and their siblings. You know, I've met everybody since I've gone over there twice. I've got to meet their entire family, and they are most definitely a second family.
Yeah. And so you had two girls for them back to back. How far apart are the girls?
22 months.
Yeah. So you're pretty close back to back pregnancies there. And do you feel like you have a really unique, special bond with those girls?
Oh, for sure. You know, after the girls were born, they stayed here in the States for between 6 and 8 weeks with both of them. And I pumped for them while they were here. And so I would go out and visit them on a daily basis and spend hours with them and just get to sit and snuggle and get my baby cuddles in that I just love. And
yeah,
that was a really great experience. So getting that extra bonding time with them after they were born, I think really helped make our relationships really close.
How do you feel like your recovery and all of the postpartum stuff was different from when you had your boys, your biological kids?
The first surrogacy was not super easy postpartum. My second keeper, as they call them in the surrogacy world, which is my second own child, I had some postpartum bleeding issues after him and needed a DNC. And so we kind of assumed that, oh, now that I've had that once, it's probably going to happen again. Only the second time, I think it was a tad bit worse. So I had some postpartum hemorrhaging up until about 10 weeks postpartum, which is a very long time. And I needed a DNC afterwards. And unfortunately, during that DNC, there kind of happened to be a hiccup where, you know, they perforated my uterus and happened to pull out one of my fallopian tubes. So I'm down a fallopian tube, which they say makes no difference in me being able to get pregnant on my own. Not that it matters anymore because we're happy with our two. But, you know, that recovery was very stressful and I just felt like it lasted forever. Yeah. And I felt like I was never going to get better. But then after I had that surgery and the bleeding and everything stopped, everything was totally fine and so much better. And once that was all finished, I felt like I recovered so much faster than I did after either of my boys. And the second girl I had was just like crazy easy. I didn't have any issues postpartum whatsoever. And I felt like myself within 2 weeks. And
you did have a shoulder dystocia with her though, when she was born.
The first one I had a shoulder dystocia. The first one had a shoulder dystocia. She was a big girl too. She was 9 pounds, 10 ounces. And then the second one was 11 pounds, 2 ounces. And she just came out so easy.
Oh my gosh. Those are giant babies. You just grow giant babies, apparently.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of scary though, not knowing what your postpartum is going to look like and knowing that you're at risk for those things. Did that make you wary at all to do surrogacy again?
Yeah. So after the first surrogacy, it did make me a little nervous just because I was worried that it was going to happen again. So then after the second one, like right after delivery, in the moment, she kind of did a manual DNC where, you know, she literally went elbows deep and just kind of scraped everything out. And she was like, wow, you just have a really sticky uterus. Mm-hmm. And so after that one, I was like, wow, okay, this is super easy. Like, let's just do this every time and no worries.
Right. Yeah. And you changed OBs in between one and two.
And I did.
Yeah. As I say, I think you learned better about advocating for yourself and.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So after having that DNC after the first surrogacy and losing my fallopian tube, I was like, okay, I can't see this OB anymore. I needed to switch. And so I actually went back to my very first OB that I had with my first kid. And at the same time is when I was getting my new job working as a medical assistant and I was working in this same OBGYN office. And that's when I met my current OB, who I did not know that she was around at the time a couple years ago. So yeah. I now work for my OBGYN.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because you get
great. It's a fantastic relationship. And I think that made delivery this last time so much easier too, because I mean, we work together. We're together all day long, every single day. So I think that helped having her be there with me.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're starting your third surrogacy journey.
Mm-hmm.
How has this time been different from the first rounds?
Oh gosh, so different. So these are first time parents again. Okay. So they know nothing about babies. Yeah. So, you know, they have nieces and nephews, but none of their own. So this is a whole new ball game again. And this time it is a heterosexual couple, whereas last time it was a gay couple. And so that's totally different. And these people live in the United States. Yeah. So our time change is not quite as drastic.
Yeah.
But they are some of the nicest people I've ever met. And I'm so glad that we got matched. And it's been very eye-opening, I think, to her to have met me that has already been a surrogate twice, whereas, you know, this is right. their first go around. And she's told me several times, like, we have no idea what we're doing. And we're so glad that we have been matched yeah. with you, that you know what you're doing and you advocate for yourself. So it's
yeah.
been good.
Yeah, that's important, I would imagine, to just, you know, the first time that you became a surrogate, nobody knew what they were doing in your your family group, right? And so now you know better, you've learned better, not just how to advocate for yourself, but also how to effectively communicate with the family and kind of what the expectations are as you move through the process, both from a like practical medical standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint. And are you hoping to maintain the same sort of close relationship with them that you have with your first family?
Yeah, for sure. So that was something that we were was very important to all of us, was having that relationship afterwards. So I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yeah. Do you think that there are a lot of misconceptions about surrogacy?
Oh, goodness, yes. So many people think that people who have surrogates are just famous people like Kim Kardashian, right. where yes, obviously they have surrogates, but the people who sign up to be surrogates for famous people sign up knowing that they will not have a relationship with those people afterwards. So they go into it saying that they're okay with not having any kind of communication. They may never see a picture of this child. I mean, nothing whatsoever after that baby gets taken away to give back to their parents. So that's something totally different and not something I would ever be interested in, because I like to see the kids grow up. So some women, you know, who need surrogates, obviously is medical reasons, or, you know, they just have lots of miscarriages themselves. And so eventually their doctor will tell them, you know, it might be time to move on to using a surrogate if you want to have a biological child of your own. And so, you know, I think misunderstandings with people wanting to become a surrogate is that they're just in it for the money,
right?
Which, you know, that is always a huge question that I get asked, is how much money are you making, or all those things, which of course I do not share that information because that's all private information that's in the contract between myself and the parents. But, you know, sometimes it's not done for a personal connection. Some people literally see it as just a business transaction. So a lot of people think that you're selling your baby for money and that it's actually yours and that it has nothing to do with the parents, then, which is all not true. I mean, it's all very legal. There's lots of legal documents. My contract is like 58 pages long. So everything is pretty much covered legally.
And do you ever get people who ask you or who make comments about, don't you just feel like you're playing God a little?
Oh gosh, yes. People say, you know, even my patients with the job that I work in, people will say, you're not meant to be a parent if you can't get pregnant on your own. And that's just terrible. Like, some people can't. I mean, plenty of people would like to be biologically related to their children, and there's nothing wrong with that. And they should have the option to have children that are biologically related to them. And that would just be using a surrogate.
We know that infertility is rampant in our country. And I mean, not just in our country, but everywhere. And that is a really difficult battle. And having walked alongside friends and family who really struggle with that and who have tried for, you know, decades to get pregnant and can't, I think if someone presented the opportunity for them to have a surrogate, I think that they would jump at it. Now, I also think that it's cost prohibitive for a lot of people, and so they don't have that option. But I don't know. I think we kind of have to find that balance of, are we playing God a little bit? Maybe, but also we have to believe that, you know, doctors and scientists have been given this wisdom and knowledge for a reason. And it ultimately is a gift. I mean, there's no, I don't think anyone can go back and say, that a child is not a gift or not worth living, right? And
living.
And so you're creating the platform and the resources and opportunity for another soul to live on this earth. And, you know, I think we have to find that balance.
I
mean,
I can't imagine my life without my children. And so knowing that there's people out there who struggle to get pregnant or cannot have children of their own, or maybe have a medical issue that they don't want to pass down to their child.
Right. Yeah.
There's no reason that they shouldn't be allowed to have children when science is a wonderful thing nowadays and it can happen for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. That's something else you don't think about, just knowing that you're going to genetically pass something down to your children. Something to consider. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced throughout your surrogacy process?
I mean, just being pregnant in general is not the easiest thing. I feel like I have it easy, but I know so many people who have it much harder than I do. And so just being pregnant and essentially giving my life away for max of 18 months at a time is kind of like what I have written in my contract is up to 18 months is how long I will be signed on. So essentially I'm signing my life away for 10 to 18 months. And that means, you know, not doing things with my children that they want to do, you know, that's a challenge. But I also think of it in the grand scheme of things of it's 9 to 18 months. Like that is a very small time frame in a lifespan. Like I feel like if I can do something for someone who is going to have something for the rest of their life, why would I not give away 9 months out of my time to give somebody the love that I have with my children?
Yeah, I love that. What has your family's response been to that? I mean, and your kids, and has everyone been equally as supportive?
Yeah, everyone has been very supportive. I think my mom was shocked when I first told her that I was going to do this. She had so many questions. And my sister the same. They were like, wait, you're going to do what?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I explained everything to them. Everyone has just been very supportive. I know of plenty of surrogates who don't have good support systems, or maybe they just have one good support person, but the rest of their family isn't supportive. Even just like in my job and out in public, I've never received a negative response yet. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful for that. And my kids, when we first told them, so Evan would have been 7 and Ryder was like 3 when I first started this. And, you know, because they were so young, we kind of kept them out of the loop because we didn't know for sure if it was going to like work or not.
Right.
And so we waited a little bit to tell them like what was going on. There's a book that I found on Amazon called The Kangaroo Pouch. And it kind of just talks about how this mama kangaroo is going to carry this baby for its kangaroo friends, and then it will give it back to them because it's their baby. And so, you know, we read that book several times and explained it to Evan, who obviously my oldest was 7, understood it more than Ryder, my 3-year-old. And so he was just like, okay, so you're going to put this baby in your belly, but it's not ours. And we're going to give it back to these other guys that you talk to. And I was like, yep.
Yeah.
And so they were like, well, how does that work? And so, you know, we very much dumbed it down for him and just kind of explained, well, they're going to take parts of him and parts of this other girl, and they kind of mix it together in a petri dish and then stick it in my belly. And then he was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So, you know, when we told him what we were doing, he was like, wow, that's really cool. I like that idea. I'm okay with that. So I was like, great, fantastic. The second time around, they already knew the family and the older girl. So they were 100% for it again. And then this time around, when I told them we were doing it again and it wasn't for the same family, they were like, wow, that's really cool. Now you get to help even more people and another family have a child. I was like, yes, exactly. Like, I'm so glad you understand this.
Yeah. I think that some of the questions that people have for surrogates are, you know, what about the impact that it has on your body?
Yeah, for sure. So I felt like at 18 years old, when I had my first kid, my body was pretty much ruined after that. And I was like, there is no coming back. So I was like, you know, when I had my second again, like, you know, I would gain the weight and lose the weight afterwards. That was no problem. I had what's called a pups rash, the first time around. So I am covered in scars. And so I was like, you know what? What's a couple more? Right. It's not gonna change that much more. So, you know, I'm not the type of person who, where I just drop the weight immediately after delivery. Like that doesn't happen for me, especially because I typically pump afterwards, like nursed my own boys. And then I pumped for the girls, pumped even longer after they went home and donated to local families. And for whatever reason, my body just holds on to the weight while I'm pumping. Yeah. So nothing came off for me until after I was done. But again, like, I just don't care. Yeah. You know, if that wasn't something that was super important to me, the way I look.
Yeah. And I think one of the other questions people would ask is, was it super awkward having essentially strangers in a hospital room with you while you pushed a baby out your hoo-ha?
Yeah. So, you know, you have the option of telling the parents that they're not allowed to come in. There's a lot of people who, if it's a heterosexual couple, they only want the mom to be in the room. Mm-hmm. Personally, for me, after you've had one and the whole world is in it, what's another 2-4 eyeballs? Right. So I couldn't care less. And also, I would never want someone to tell me that I had to miss out on the birth of my child. So I would never ask another parent to miss out on the birth of their child. That's a huge thing.
Yeah. What was that moment like for you when you delivered the baby and then what? Then you pass it off to her dad. And then what happens? What is that like?
Yeah. So, I mean, we very much had like a very specific birth plan. You know, the first time around when she got stuck, it was a little different. You know, the room kind of got quiet and 15 NICU people came in. So the room kind of got silent for a few minutes and everyone was in tears. This was, of course, before COVID. So I had my husband in the room. I had both of the dads in the room. My mom was in the room and we had a photographer. So I'm sure the staff of the hospital just loved us. But, you know, one of the dads got to cut the cord and they handed her right off to the NICU team. And, you know, once they got her taken care of and everything, she was able to do skin to skin with one of the dads. That was something that I was not interested in. You know, usually when you give birth to your own child, they just plop the baby up on your chest and take everything right there. But these are not my children. And I feel like that's a very special bonding moment. And so that is not something that I ever wanted to do. You know, if the parents couldn't be there for delivery for whatever reason, if they didn't get to town in time, then 100%, like I would step in and take over that position for just the baby's essential needs. But if the parents were there, then that's not something I wanted to do. Yeah. So after they got her all cleaned up and everything, the dads then did skin to skin, which then we sit in recovery for a couple of hours. And then we went, you know, down the hall to the postpartum floor and we each had our own separate rooms, which was fantastic because what female wants to be walking around postpartum, you know, with all those wonderful things with two men in the room with her. So, you know, at that point they were there for delivery. So I feel like we're already super close and it really wouldn't have made a difference, but it was nice to then feel like I had my own space and I could just do whatever I needed. I was pumping for them. And so we'd go up and down the hall and give milk, hand milk off, and they'd come down to my room during the day and we just sit and, you know, sit and chat and snuggle her for hours. And, you know, that was, we definitely had lots of bonding time in the hospital and afterwards since they stayed for weeks after.
Was it a really emotional experience for everyone in the room when those babies are born?
It was for sure both times. So, you know, everything is kind of nerve wracking at the end because I have very large babies and in France, that's just not a thing. And so thinking of medical things are very different in the United States than they are in France. And so our medical practices and what we think is okay is different than what they think is okay. So things were hectic and stressful at delivery for both of the girls, but then right afterwards, like everything was okay. The girls were healthy and safe. I was healthy and safe. Yeah. And so everyone took a deep breath and it was like, wow, this is really a magical moment. It was very, very special.
Yeah. What are some other blessings that you have found on account of this journey?
Just being able to give them the joy that I have on a daily basis and going from 1 to 2 also in a very short time frame for them, I think really opened their eyes. And so seeing like them experience everything has just been very, very rewarding, and seeing how happy they are, it's really special.
Yeah. And they wound up using your name as the second girl's middle name, which is special.
Yeah. The second baby has my first name as one of her middle names. Yeah. That's how they felt like they kind of wanted to close up our journeys together, was giving her my first name as one of her middle names.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Why do you feel like surrogacy is such an important gift, and why are you so thankful that it's become just an integral part of your own story?
I just feel like it's so important because, you know, again, I just could not imagine my life without kids. That's literally all I've ever wanted, was mm-hmm. to be a mom. And I'm so thankful for both of my kids. I just want other people to have that same happiness that have longed and strived for having children for so many years. This current family has, you know, wanted kids for years, and it's finally coming true for them. And yeah. So, you know, I think they're still in the anxious, nervous phase where we're just kind of in a wait and see. But I can't wait to see their faces as things progress.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for people who are considering surrogacy, either to become a surrogate or to use a surrogate to grow their family?
For intended parents, you know, just make sure that you do your research and you get all the facts on your surrogate, and, you know, make sure that they're in it for the right reasons and that you guys have the same views on everything, so that, you know, nobody tries to change, you know, your contracts or anything like that in the last second, or try to do other, you know, just change any mutual agreements that you guys had in the beginning.
Right.
Surrogates, I would just say, do your research. Just do your research. There's so many different medication protocols that you could be on. All clinics really do different ones. And so just researching the medications that you might possibly be put on, the dosages of medications that you might possibly be put on, and the timing of them. You know, I personally prefer to give myself all of my shots. Mm. And so, you know, knowing that you're likely going to have to do some type of injection at some point, and also being okay with flying, because again, you know, your clinic could be on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And so the easiest way to get there is going to be flying. You know, talking with your doctors and everything, and making sure that the medications that you're going to be on aren't going to have any conflicting issues on your body. Yeah, just do your research on your agencies and everything, because again, you can find some really shady ones who are just in it for the money, and you can also find very reputable ones that are actually really good and will help you with everything that you need. There's clinics and doctors that will pass you as being a surrogate when maybe necessarily you shouldn't have been. Right. And so then you're risking your own body and, you know, your family by possibly losing you. So just really do your research.
Yeah. And know that it's not for everyone, but if you feel called in yeah. that direction, open those doors, walk down that path and see what it might look like, both for you and for another family, and know that there is a lot of good and a lot of blessings to come out of that.
Yes.
Amy, do you have anything else to share with us, or any resources and recommendations for our listeners before we go?
You know, I just did a basic Google search to find agencies, and I ended up choosing Circle. I've used them for all three surrogacies. They've been great to me. I've enjoyed every single journey that I've had so far. The Kangaroo Pouch, again, the book, is a great one to read for young kids, or maybe anybody that just doesn't understand the process. It really explains everything, being a surrogate. When we have patients with our boys, like, they, when we go to Walmart and stuff, people would be like, oh, they would ask the boys, like, oh, are you so excited to be a big brother? And they would look at me and then look back at the cashier, and they'd just say, no, it's not ours. It's not coming home with us. And the cashier would just look at me like a deer in the headlights. I'm like, yeah, I'm just a surrogate. It's not ours.
Yeah. Yeah. That is confusing. They're like, where's the baby going?
Yeah.
I'm going to name that the title of this episode. The baby's not mine.
Yeah.
It's not my baby. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Amy. It's so good to see you and to connect, and for you to be able to share your story. And I just can't wait to see how this continues to unfold for you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for chatting, Brittany.
Thanks for listening in today, friends. If your story includes building your family through surrogacy or in any other non-traditional way, we would love to hear about it. You can connect with us on our brand new She Is Kindred Network. You'll find the link in our show notes, and once you join for free, you'll be able to participate in more in-depth conversations surrounding our weekly topics, get involved in Kindred cohorts, and sign up for our monthly events. We wanted to create a space away from social media platforms, and we are loving watching our community flourish there, so we hope that you'll join us. Next week, we'll be jumping into an even less talked about form of family building, embryo adoption. Chad and Skylar Watson will be sharing their journey and all of the challenges and blessings that have come from adopting embryos for their family. They are the sweetest couple, and I know their perspective will be inspiring and bring loads of joy to your week. But until then, keep digging deep to cultivate common ground and common grace, sisters. We'll see you next week.